There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
Hey, Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska named three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 8.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Hello, hello, hello.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thank you for making your way here for checking out the episode. Please do hit that subscribe button so you can get three new interviews sent to you just like this every single week. New one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. A great way to keep up with your favorite artists. Discover the new ones at Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Don't forget to give the series a rating and leave a review if you feel so inspired. Those always help out so much. I had some great guests on lately. Kim Gordon of Sonic Youth, Mike Campbell from Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, actor Jeff Daniels, Mark Oliver Everett from Eels, Derek Trucks, Carly Pierce, director Richard Linklater, Sal Vulcano from Impractical Jokers, Brandi Carlile, Ani DeFranco, Maya Hawke, Caleb Followa from Kings of Leon. Just an example of what you can get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. And that's me, Kyle Meredith, today talking with comedian Ali Siddiq, who's just released part four of his ongoing series, The Domino Effect. This is the conclusion of his stand-up special that retraces his arrest at 19 years old and the six-year incarceration that followed from trafficking drugs. The comedian will discuss constructing this moment in his life into a series, really masterfully, his ability to work with silence in his act, and finding the funny in very heavy subject matter. Ali also previews his next big act, In the Shadows, which picks up the story after prison to when he became a stand-up comedian, as well as the early trudge of picking this kind of trade as a career, finding a level of fame that he's comfortable with, and the stress dreams that affect his real life. All that and more, we're talking The Domino Effect Part 4. It's Kyle Meredith with Ali Siddiq.
Hey, how you doing?
I was, sorry, I spaced out while I was making sure I was recording here, because out of these 6 years I've been doing this, for the first time this week, I got about 3 minutes into the interview and realized that record button's not going. It's something you have nightmares, like work stress dreams, and it finally happens. So
mine is missing a flight or a show, and so I could be resting, and I will jump up and run out and get everything together and realize, and I'm already where I'm supposed to be. Like, I'm already... Like, I'm like, I missed my flight.
Yeah, so like the work stress dream actually infiltrates into your reality there for a moment.
Yeah, it's you know, I'm supposed to be in Seattle. I got a show on Friday, and I knew I got up and I did something this morning, so I'm resting. It's Thursday, and I done rushed out of the hotel, bags and everything, because I'm about to miss my flight to Seattle, and I don't realize that I'm in Seattle until I get all the way downstairs, elevator. Like, this is not Houston.
That's impressive. Yeah. That really is. That's beyond the thing. You also do because you have the radio show too, right?
Yeah, I'm done with radio. It's over. I had.
Okay, that's what I didn't know. Like because I do radio on the other side of my and that stress dream is something that I've had for 20 years. When you go into the studio and nothing works, and that's a pretty common one for any, you know, like radio DJ or something.
My stress dream with that is, oh, I have to go there again and work. And it was crazy for me doing radio and still on tour, because I didn't realize that I was working 7 days a week until I got stressed out and I said it out loud. Do y'all realize I'm working 7 days a week?
Like, and that's it. At that point, you're just like, done, stop, over.
Wait, going in every day trying to get fired. Like, literally going in every day trying to get fired. They never fire you when you want to get fired. It was people that couldn't believe the things that I was getting away with. They was like, they would have fired me for that. I'm like, hey, man, that's why I did it. I thought they would have fired me. They didn't. They kept understanding. I was like, I didn't come to work for 3 days unannounced. Like, I didn't even say I wasn't coming. I got back. They was like, welcome back. I'm like, so no nothing? Okay. All right. I'm gonna get drunk on the radio. And it'd be very noticeable. Nothing? Okay. All right. What do I have to do to get fired? I was saying something like that on the radio. Like, doesn't matter what you do. You're a comic. They put everything off as, oh, he's just a comic. That's what he does. Like, no.
Yeah, it's the culture of understanding that happened in the last 10 years. You know, when HR switched. Because it used to be, if you didn't show up for 3 days, no call, no show, you're out of here. Now it's, I understand. People need time off. You need to take mental health breaks. Like, it makes it nearly, not impossible. It makes it a lot harder to get fired in that way. Yeah.
No, I don't think you understand. I'm taking days and I'm on Instagram live. Like, they see me out having a good time. Like, I'm like, and they like, no, still no fire. He's in Kansas working. No, it clearly says Houston Tavern.
Congratulations on finally making those dreams realized, though. That's
they fired me on a Thursday. I was in Chicago. They called me and said, we're no longer renewing your contract. I was like, contract been up. I was waiting on y'all to, you know, do this. They fired me, and then I went and took a picture. I'm like, I got fired, and then I literally walked out of my hotel and went and took a picture of it saying Chicago Theater, Ali Sadiq sold out. I was like, this is how much I care about y'all firing me. 3,500 people, 3,553 actually. This is what I'll be doing tomorrow.
Wave and smile. Thank you very much. Wait,
thank you for relieving me of the torture. Because I couldn't quit. I'm not a quitter. I can't quit. So I need you to relieve me of my duties. Mm-hmm.
I did it once at a factory a long time ago, like when I was like 20, for the same reason. And I understand what it to go through on that. I didn't have a big theater behind me full of 3,500 people to back it up afterward. And so I think that's where you went on this. Congratulations once again. I do got to say, with that in mind, though, speaking of all those people showing up, the domino effect now reaching its part four, And what an incredible journey this is in. A heavy journey, a hilarious journey. I feel like what you've accomplished are those game-changing, legendary comedic moments that people talk about for a long, long time.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I'm very weird when it comes to compliments, but this one, I'm very comfortable with this one because it is a actual first that a comic took on this journey to do a series of specials that's all connected, you know, through one journey, through one eye, and a lot of moments, a lot of life moments, you know, and growth within this journey. And for it to be the first series, the first of its kind, I'm very proud. Like I'm extremely proud of this accomplishment, which I can attribute some of it to the fans, because I don't think I would have ever did it if they would have never asked after the first Domino Effect. Hey man, what's the rest of the story? And that prompted me to say, well, let me start, you know, navigating through this story of for each step of how, you know, this journey started with me being a young kid and then becoming incarcerated. I think, you know, we watched a lot of movies about people becoming incarcerated. People talked about it, you know, but nobody ever telling you how and the pitfalls of it and the mistakes of it. And then the journey through the 6 years of incarceration and the development within that angle from 19 to 25 is, and I don't say remarkable, but it's definitely intriguing. Mm-hmm. You know, even with me, I don't watch Domino Effect 2 because that's a very hard thing for me. I didn't run it like most comics do. I didn't run Domino Effect 2. We just shot it because it was going to be too heavy for me as a person. It would have been too heavy for me to do that every night. But we only did it that Saturday, and then we were like, okay, we got it. And then Domino Effect 3 is actually my favorite. Domino Effect 4 is great to me. It's a great conclusion. It's 2 hours. I love it. But Domino Effect 3 is, and because I look back on that time at myself, it was like, yo, man, I was the constant reality checks of, hey, man, you can think that you one thing in the street and you didn't develop the little street savvy. But, hey, wait a minute. Everybody in here is a criminal. Like, this is different. This is definitely different. This is like, hey, okay. Okay, in the streets, we all sold drugs. Like, this is like all of us right here sold drugs. He murders people. He's a different guy. He's a different guy. He's definitely a different guy. Like,
and we'll be right back right after this.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Ali Sadiq.
And those moments in three, by the way, I think the amount of times I've told people, I mean, probably several moments, but there's one, you know, you get something you like, it's hard to pick favorites. I'll say at the moment, the one I keep talking about when I'm telling people about this series is, you know, oh, your bail, your bond is, what was it, like 80,000, whatever it was. And you're like, do it. Your lawyer's like, wait a second, you have no job. You're young and you're saying you're not guilty, but yeah, let's pay tens of thousands of dollars out of there. Like that moment, right? I've laughed so much about that moment. Like there's so many of those spots. And for you to, you know, that's a 1 hour special. As you said, part four is 2 hour. For you to extrapolate basically one, not one story, but like part three is kind of one story for 1 hour. To be able to do that and to feel comfortable with that and to build on these moments of tension. Like, there are a lot of comics who are afraid of the silence. You do not seem to be afraid of the silence.
No, I think, you know how people have to notice things about you sometimes. Like, hey, you notice you do this? I remember when I actually remember the day that someone told me that. And I remember the person, I remember the time, and I remember why they said it. And when people watch me, this is how I know that you actually watched. Because you can do a lot of interviews and you'll know, like, these people don't know you. But when somebody actually watches your material, this is the common thread. Hey, how is it that you are so comfortable in silence when most comics need the da-da-da-da? I start off very silent, and in the course of telling a story, there's going to be moments where the person is quiet. They're not commenting after everything. They're not laughing. They just listen to what you're saying. D.L. Hughley was the first person that ever told me, say, man, you are a very dangerous comic. I said, what? He said, when you have a comic that is okay, and I'm talking about really okay, with the silence, like you use the silence as a part of what you're doing. It's not a hindrance. You don't need to hear noise. Sign of greatness. Like, and I was confused. Like, I had no idea that I even did that. And the silence is a part of the set, so to speak. It's a part of the, I need you quiet for you to hear the next thing. And sometimes the laughter kind of interrupts the jazz, the music of the story, the beat of it, the rhythm of it that I'm telling. Sometimes the story, the laughter will stop the rhythm of it. So this is a thing that I'm a comic. If you watch me as a young comic, you're going to break every rule that the comedy Bible and the comedy gurus that tell you to not to do. I break every last one of those rules, like every single one of them. It's like, I've seen the rules and be like, I should be a failure. like I do all of this. Like, I do everything. I put the microphone stand in front of my face. I do all of it. So I am different in that aspect because I know where I want to go. Like, I step on laughter because I need you to be quiet. Like, I'm already in the rhythm of telling it. And you start laughing, and then I step on the laugh. I start talking for people to be quiet. And you're not supposed to step on that. You're supposed to let it wave out. But I don't need it right now. Like, wait. keep that laughter, because you're going to need it if you're not going to throw up down the way from laughing. Like, because I'm finna say something that's going to, because I want to laugh. Because it was so crazy that I want to laugh, because I know that it happened. And it's those moments that in three that I laugh at that's so hysterical to me. Like, I remember when that man came in and he was giving out floors, and I was standing there and he said, 11th floor. 11th floor, that's the gym. And I saw that, because he was, you know, old man. He's like, man, it was good. And then that man said, no, that's 7. And I literally, when he told me 10, I said, hey, man, look on there and see if that's the right floor, because you just got his wrong. And that man going to show me that it said 10th floor. Because I know he's not supposed to do that. He's just going to, look, no, 10. And then I said, wow. And then that man called me scary. He's like, what, you're scary? I'm like, are you supposed to even talk to me? And it's these moments as a kid. And I'm gonna say this to drop a bomb, because I'm gonna do this in the next couple of weeks. Because you brought it up, because I was talking to Rio. The bomb was 150,000, and Rio Harris is the attorney. His son, last Tuesday, his son called me. My manager called me and said, here go the number. Rio Harris Jr. wants to speak to you, and apparently his father is still alive. I said in the thing that he had passed, and then I explained to them why I thought he passed. They had closed his practice down. So Rio Harris is alive, and we're supposed to have dinner in the next couple of weeks together. He was like, yo, appreciate the shout out. The story was hilarious, and it went just like I remember it. He said, and I'm an old man. I was like, he said, because I talk about how this young kid was really working me. He was like, because I had 1,000 things on how to get out of Rio. Like, man, let me get this straight. So you read it in the paper that Woody Denson is up for bribery, and you want me to go to him and tell him this. I think that train has left. I think that's passed, sir.
Like, it's like confidence that all of us have when we're young, and that confidence is so wrong most of the time.
Look, I want you to go in there and tell him that I was using. So you got a 5 kilo hat. I gotta have it, man. Man, listen, Rio, you ain't doing your job, man.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Ali Sadiq.
You know, to further on your point, because you were talking about that silence in the jazz and those moments where you don't need the laughter, because part four, first off, knowing it's 2 hours, I'm wondering how you're going to set the pacing for this. Just curiosity on my part. And that halfway point, and it gets very serious. And very heavy and very, I mean, poignant too. We'll have peace or you will die. You know, that you keep repeating there. And, you know, for a while, I'm wondering, like, how is he gonna get back from this? You know, and of course you do, and you bring it back around, and it is great. But that moment too, because that moment, of course, you know, the best moments like this tell the story, but keep telling the story. I mean, we'll have peace or you will die is, I mean, that's civilization, you know, in a nutshell right there. I don't, like, how do you get out of that? How did you even know what you were doing in that moment? Because that is a very, very heavy spot.
You actually don't, because that part wasn't written. It's the part in the, I always leave space for real points that I know that's on my mind that I'm trying to avoid that may just come out. Just like with two, I had no idea. I'm the director, the cinematographer, the manager, everybody tell you, he had no earthly idea of how he was going to get from out of his sister, the emotions of his sister, because we had never saw it. He never ran it. So the only thing that I had in the audience place for two was my older sister. I had my sister in the audience. So if I could not make it out, I know my older sister would have came on stage and she would have got me. She would have held me. She would have protected me like she's always done. Because she's 2 years older than me, she's always protected me. In that moment, I know my voice and I know what's important to me. And in that space, this is a real thing about peace, because this is the, in order to have a understanding of consequences, you got to understand that this is the natural balance of things, and this is what we would prefer, because everybody is winning in this particular instance. You doing what you want to do, you doing what you want to do, and it's not impeding on anybody else's peace. If that can't be accomplished, then a presidency of dominance is going to have to be done, which we would prefer not to do. And society doesn't see it like that. But in a space where people are supposed to be savage, we see it like that. Just like I explained to people, oh, I live in the projects. So just because you live in the projects doesn't mean that it has to be a certain type of way, right? Because in the most foul place, prison. It was clean because we wouldn't allow it to happen any other type of way. It was no, I've never stayed in a cell with a dirty person that was unorganized for a long period of time. Once it's acknowledged that you're not clean, then it's going to be a conversation. Hey, you may want to, you know, clean up with me. Because now you're throwing off the rhythm, the balance of the cell, the peace. Okay. So I've said it once. Now the second time is going to be a little more aggressive. And then I'm going to ask you to make your way to the COs to make provisions to get out of the cell. Now, if that can't happen, then something else has to happen to once again reestablish peace. Not that we want this to happen, not that I want this to happen, but to reestablish peace and harmony, this has to happen. And a project, if somebody decided, hey, we're going to keep this project place clean, by all means, that's what would have to happen. Just like with my mom, we would stay in these apartment buildings, right? And on the apartment building, you got four apartments on this side, four apartments on the back. Somebody has roaches. So now roaches travel. So my mom, me growing up seeing this same thing, my mom would go to each person's house and say, hey, we're going to bomb the apartment building on Saturday. We want everybody to bomb on Saturday. So let's figure out what time we're going to do, what time we're going to leave, X, Y, and Z. Now, if you was a person that was refusing this, like, yo, so my mom, like, so you want to keep the roaches? Do you want to establish peace in this office? Then it's gonna get difficult. And now you have the three apartments on this side and then three apartments on the other side. Now you have all these people against one person to establish the peace. And I think it's more of a lesson or understanding. Because I think that we in this society, we all actually want the same thing. And I think that somewhere in this is a discrepancy, and that discrepancy has to be removed. Because I don't think that one person that I've ever met don't want good food, clean water, shelter, great entertainment, education for their children, great life for their children to be safe. I don't know these people that don't want this. I don't. So how do we establish this on all fronts? Because I live in a very, my audience is very multicultural. My home life is very multicultural. I don't have any problems with any person, but I do know this: if you want to see a unified front in our neighborhood, turn. It's a curve, like, so in our neighborhood, you're supposed to, when you turn it, you're supposed to go to the far lane so the other car can go to the far lane so both of y'all can see the direction that y'all trying to go. Turn short and then block that person off from getting there. And then when I see it, I immediately go to the chat. I immediately go to the chat of the neighborhood and they describe your car. You are called all type of, I'm talking all the worst names from very established people because you're not driving correctly, but you won't do it again. Once you see that chat, like, yo, because somebody's going to tell you, did you see you in the chat? This is your car and everything. And they called you everything in the book. So you learn, go to the far side and people look at you too. Yo, are you new? You just moved over. And everybody's against you because you are disrupting the peace of this neighborhood.
Ali, yeah. Sadiq has just called you out in the neighborhood chats. That's you are in trouble. You have done something wrong.
Man, do you understand? It's like California drivers. When I was on the radio, right? California drivers, a lot of people from California moved to Houston. And in California, they have this thing where they drive like this is a car. And they drive like this many cars back. We don't drive like that. We drive one car. And so you boom, boom, boom. And so they're creating traffic. They're creating traffic in Houston. and we don't need nobody creating traffic. And I was on the radio. I was like, yo, look, I just want to throw this out there to all people from California. Go home. Like, literally, just keep driving until you are out of our city, because your driving is crazy. The amount of phone calls that would come in from people from Houston agreeing, like, yo, it would be weird when you would hear people saying things that I know that they don't normally say in a normal vernacular. Grown people saying, listen, on God, I want this. I know that you don't say that. I'm like, your kids have put that in your mind, like, on God, I want them to go home, on God. Like, man, you are 55, sir. You call in, so on God, yes, sir. I'm just telling you how serious it is. Because this is ridiculous. Just to restore the
So I love that parallel that has been drawn, like what you were talking about in that prison to traffic in Houston. It's more or less the same thing.
It'd be like, man, if y'all can't drive, man, just take the bus. Just take the transit system, because we don't do this. We don't need 13 cars. I know y'all got this thing where you gotta peel out and shoot out, this case of a shootout. Well, we don't have shootouts out here. So this is not the old West. If we're gonna shoot out, we're gonna be on a horse. You know what I'm saying? We don't shoot out on a street. Crazy, man.
Well, that brings up an interesting thought too, because you know, talk about those parallels. Because what the tour you've got right now is I Got a Story to Tell tour, is that right?
Yeah, sir.
And I don't know when you put together the domino effect, but I'm guessing that you didn't tour the domino effect in the same way. Do you have to put together like two sets at once when you're doing something like this?
I don't want to sound, I hate these type of questions, because this is, let me tell you why I hate these questions, because I answer it honestly, and it kind of makes me seem unreal. Okay. So.
And you can also, by the way, you can say next question.
Yeah. I don't avoid anything. So the domino effect, what I do is when I'm putting together, those are things that I run for the continuity of the beats of it, but I don't have to write anything, because that's my life. So that's just my memory. I do different stories in the course of touring a show. So Domino Effect was shot, I was still in the clubs, right? So say if I'm there, I get there on a Friday, I'm doing two shows on a Friday, three shows on Saturday, two shows on a Sunday, or whatever the thing is. Say if I'm doing five shows. So I'm gonna run the Domino Effect in parts between the five shows. I'm gonna run maybe one story in between the five shows, and I'm going to do all the other stuff that I'm doing. So if I do 10 shows, I'm going to do 10 different sets. And it's going to be one story from the whatever special that I'm working on. So I did 3 and 4 together in October. So I shot them both. I shot Domino Effect 3. We did two shows on Friday. So I shot that on Friday. Then we did Domino Effect 4. We shot the two shows on Saturday. And then that was done. And then I started touring the next two specials. So I'm shooting two specials in Dallas before I start the series of In the Shadows. So In the Shadows is a walk from me getting out and starting life in free society with all of this kind of good and bad information, because the point of In the Shadows is that I'm 19 when I went in, 4 days after I turned 19. So I'm actually still stuck there socially. so socially until 25. So now I'm out in society, and I have $100 that they gave me to my name to start my life. And then I have these other things in my head. I'm on parole. I can, if somebody reported me for something, they would pick me up and I would go back to jail, fight my situation from there. So now I'm living in the shadows. I'm not giving you any real information about me because I don't need you to know me to put me in any type of disposition. But at the same time, I'm trying to be a comic, which is a public thing, but I'm trying to be private. Like, and then people, oh, hey, they want to know things about you. You're like, oh. So it's like, and I have a job and I'm trying to do stand up and I don't know, and I'm trying to find a job. And then I start and the Kings of Comedy happens and nobody's going to see anybody but the Kings. And I'm on TV, but I'm living in my friend's garage and I'm running a record pool and I'm doing everything that's still related to comedy, but I'm not getting it. The first 10 years of stand-up is atrocious. Like you just you doing stuff and man, it's a roller coaster of things. And I'm still not free. And then I'm going through these other woes, and then 07 comes, October 21st of 2007. I am finally about to be released from mental prison now. I'm off parole. And this comes with a different freedom. And now I've backtracked as a human being because now I'm going back to settle scores that I couldn't settle because I was on parole. And I'm doing that for a whole year, just running around settling scores and being a menace to society because I was felt bottled up and career's not going to what I would like to be at, and not being grateful for the position. You know, it's part of that, not being grateful, and then getting things and losing things that I thought that would catapult, and then just really starting to understand that there's not one thing in stand-up that gets you to the next level. It is a staircase of accomplishments. It's each one is building your portfolio of who you are and the persona of who you are, and then reinventing yourself multiple times. In 26 years, I've reinvented myself maybe 8 significant times. Like really, whether it was far as look, whether as far as dress, whether as far as presentation, whether as far as when, and then I'm writing this book called Applied Advice. I remember Dick Gregory told me, he said, man, you are going to be really, really phenomenal if you can control your attitude. Because, oh, you got the worst attitude. And I'm like, what? And I hadn't even done anything for him to say that. He told me that he saw it. So I'm looking at you. I see it in you. You say, I'm a Libra, just like you. I can see you got this fire in you that you got to contain it. Because it's not what society is doing to you. It's what you're not seeing, how you can navigate and change the society that's around you. And you like basically telling you getting mad about things that's beyond your control. If you want to change that, then you got to teach different. You got to walk different. You have to become different. You have to be, your palate has to be, you know, more tolerable than you've been, because you always be in distress. And he was right. It took me a minute to stop wanting more for people than they wanted for themselves, or stop putting what I would do in somebody else's head and stop thinking, oh, they should do it like me, you know, but then that wouldn't make me me. That would make me them or them I, you know, and not waiting. You know, I think that's another thing in comedy that makes comics bitter. so to speak, you know, because you'll wait on somebody to accept you in this game. You'll wait on somebody to say that you're good enough. You know, even though you had this tough skin of hearing no, 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 but you still waiting on the acceptance when you can do things on your own, because this is an independent craft. And what you're doing before you got a manager, before you got an agent, before you even get to that step, you were calling and booking yourself and showing up and traveling. You were doing all these things and loving the craft in the process. And then you got caught up in, I want to be a superstar comic. Not just a comedian, a superstar comic. It's a lot of comics, man, that people never that don't know that's making great living. You know how crazy it is for the person who is doing the warm-up for Ellen, or the person that he's like, you have no idea who he is, but he jumps in a Maserati and like you waiting on a lift and he pulls up like, hey man, you cool on the show tonight, man. You like, was that the warm-up? And he has on his Maserati plate, warm up. he don't even have his name. He's like, you like, okay, all right. Then you see somebody that's on a cruise ship. You go on a cruise, and you like, hey man, this guy's hysterical. He should be out there. And he's like, no, been out there, don't want to do it. I travel the world. I perform once a week on Royal Caribbean. And yeah, I'll be in Switzerland tomorrow. He's like, what? Yeah, I don't even own the place. I live on the ships. I don't even own the place. Like, I get off one ship and go to another. And you're like, but I have very nice luggage. Like, oh, okay. This is living a life. He's seen the world, performing on a cruise ship. What could be better? It's so many lanes to success in this business. But you get caught up in one. Hey, man, why you not like Kevin Hart? But it's a bunch of Caucasian comics that are living a life and they don't do this to each other. Hey, man, why you not like Jeff Foxworthy? Like, they don't say that. They're like, yo, man, I got a gig at a bar tomorrow, man. And this is great. I'm getting paid $150. Like,
Foxworthy was not the name I expected, by the way. That was...
Why are you not Foxworthy? It's so many. I think I put myself in this thing that made me in competition with people that had me angry about things, and I felt like I was getting overlooked in the politics of it all. And then I settled into, it's only politics and it's only gatekeepers. It's only things. If I'm trying to get into somebody else's gate, you know what I'm saying? You can't, nobody's stopping me in comedy from being in my own lane. And then it's just, if I'm trying to do this, then I have to go through these people and jump through these hoops because I'm trying to do that. When I was trying to do the clubs, it was a booker. Hey, let's get to it. And he liked you or he didn't like you. You did an open mic, you know, when I was on a cruise ship or when I was in a play. I used to do stand-up. I used to open for a play. There's a random guy, saw me at the thing. Hey, man, you think you can do 10 minutes before the play? Yeah. Yeah. $500 a night? Yeah. How many nights? 3 nights? $1,500? Oh, I'm living the dream. But then I decided that dream was too small for me. I wanted a bigger dream. And then all of a sudden, I'm back to people, hey man, pay you $500 to do this. And then secretly, somebody come on, I'll do it for $300. And then you get hey man, we're gonna go a little different direction with the show.
Yeah, okay.
Then you see the show, you like, oh, I got undercut. Because now a bunch of people want that position. A bunch of people want a lot of positions. So now you in this rat race fight. And then you see that it's different on one side than the other side. You go to tape shows and it's a competition. I'm going to be the funniest person there. Then you go on the mainstream side and everybody here is like this. Man, I hope everyone does good because I'm trying not to bomb. And hope like everybody has this hey man, I hope everybody does good because I'm nervous as shit. Like, that's the different mindset. And you're like, wow, they nervous? Well, I'm finna go kill this thing. But in your mind, you're like, man, I'm nervous too. I would rather the nervous camaraderie than the, yeah, you better go out and kill because I'm finna go out and kill this thing. And then it's basic and you see the different level of artistry and you start to sink into these other things and then you become a little easier. And then you understand why Dick said that he felt like he was angry.
It comes back around to keeping that peace.
Yeah, back to keeping the peace within yourself, man. It's like really comfortable to go where everybody wants you to win when you go on stage. And not only that, you want as a headline, it is a joyous thing for me to walk the host and the feature to the side of the stage and to greet them when they come off stage. It's a joyous thing because they did so well. You want so much for them and they are part of this show and you give this camaraderie, this feeling, hey man, I'm rooting for you out there. I don't want you to do bad. I don't want, you do bad, so it makes me look better. I'm not under that method. You do good. And you do good, and that makes me look great because I'm going to go out there and do good. And now I'm at this peace where, man, I'm not angry at all. I'm just supportive, you know, and happy to be in the position. You know, that's another thing that I'm happy to be in this position. This is a joyous position to be in theaters and all these people come to see you at one time and you felt like you worked very, very hard to get in this position and you still, I am very, very appreciative and very humbled that people took time, paid their money and got dressed and made it out to come see. Like, I am elated to see the people. Like, I'm very, very excited. I'm very happy. And I understand this piece. And I don't care if it's 3,000 or it's 300. These are people that came to hear you talk. How can you not be excited about that? Who else has this life that people pay you to talk to them for an hour? You get paid whatever you get paid for an hour. Even if it's the lowest scale, I remember when me finding joy in, I talked for 15 minutes, they gave me $50. What? I talked to you for 20 minutes, I ain't got nothing but an attitude, but they gave me $50. You know, what am I upset about? And so you get this knowledge and now you get this experience you can explain to younger comics who, I can count the times where I'm the voice of reason, and I never thought I would be. Like what? I was a crazy man in this business. Then all of a sudden, I'm like, hey, man, this person did my joke on their special, and da 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 da. Let me hear the joke. You thought that was worthy of being on a special? I'm glad they did it. I'm glad they did it to stop you from doing it because you are way better than that. And they mind like they that's not what they thought was gonna happen. They thought I was gonna be, well, let's call him and talk to him and threaten him and da-da-da-da. It's I'm glad they did it on a special so I wouldn't have to call you and tell you I saw that on your special and tell you how displeased I was with it. Like I was like, you are almost 50 and what you wanna do is a penis joke. So you are 55 and you want to do a vagina joke? You want to do a doo-doo joke? So I'm just asking. I went to open mic last night. Guy who only been doing it for 2 months. He had a penis joke. He had a vagina joke. He doo-dooed on himself twice. And he also... mean, you get what I'm going with this? Like this, he did 10 minutes and he had all of this in his set. And you have been doing stand-up for 20 years and I'm trying to figure it out. Like, you have nothing else to talk about. Okay, well, let me give you something. All right. I fell off a ladder yesterday. As a grown man, I fell off a ladder. You see where I'm finna go with this? I'm finna tell the whole story about how I got on this ladder, how it started, is then who told me that I should have been up there. Hey, I was a little concussed. You'll find that out later. But
that's what I'm saying, though. It's like watching how you pull that stuff out. Watching how you pull that stuff out of just, I wouldn't say everyday life, because prison life is not everyday life, although it was everyday for you at the moment. But it is so impressive. And I mean that, Ali, it's so impressive what you do. I regret that I missed you. You were just here in Louisville, too.
And, oh, man. If you talk about a good time. You talking about a good time in Louisville? I think I did an hour and a half, and it was because I was doing these stories and explaining the different levels of comedy at the same time. And I know these people was like, "Yo, this is a massive class," and I got to figure out where I'm at in my life that this was funny. When he said this, and then I understood this, but this was even funny because I explained the difference in stand up. Like I say, I can tell you the same story two different ways. And depending upon your level of maturity of what you would find funny, same story. I say, guy walks into a barbershop, my friend, and he threw his blueprints down on the barbershop floor and said, "This city won't let me build shit in this city." And I just bust out laughing. And I said, then he picked the blueprints up and slid them open and said, "They're gonna tell me I need fucking draining right here. I need some goddamn draining. Do it look like I need draining right there?" And I looked at the blueprint and I said, "Yeah. Looks like you need draining right there. Fuck you, Ali." Then he rolled his shit up, put it back in the tube, and walked out. I said, now, to a lot of y'all, that's not hysterical. But to me, it is hysterical. Let me tell you this. I said, let me tell you the story a different way. Dude walks into a barbershop and throws $18,000 on the ground and says, "This city won't let me build shit in this city." You know what I'm saying? Stupid ass city. I got all this money. Won't let me build shit. You think this ain't enough money to build a fucking drainage system? And I said, don't look like enough money to build a gather all the money. Then he walked out. I said, some of y'all, it's hysterical that somebody threw $18,000 on the ground. The first part wasn't that hysterical to you. You know why? Because you didn't know that, you don't know that blueprints cost for $18,000 and because you never built shit. Yeah, man, this is hysterical to me because I'm building a project right now and I got all type of goddamn tags on my shit with permits and I'm not permitted. All type of tags on the shit. I hate the city. I say two different things. Shit. Like, y'all, I don't have to explain it to you in the form that you want to explain on shit. Hey, I said, man, you don't understand. And it was people in the audience mad like me, like, yo, man, the city. When you're trying to build something, I'm like, it's crazy, ain't it? It's crazy. Man, and that's the whole thing about, I went from that to the homeowner association making me cut my trees. It's a life out here that I know that people who live in a place where the homeowner association, you don't even know who they are. You just randomly get something in your mailbox. Who is this person? First of all, you're not even supposed to take pictures with me in the picture. In the picture. I see that. Okay, my semen is cracked and I'm standing right next to it, but you're not supposed to put me in the picture to act like I'm aware of it.
The domino effect. It is a legendary comedic moment. It is seriously a legendary comedic moment. Congratulations on this one. You know, take those compliments. Be proud of this. I know you are. It is, and I cannot wait to see you in the shadows.
Man, thank you very much, man. Thank you. Thank you for this interview.
My thanks to Ali. The Domino Effect Part 4 is out now. Thanks to you for checking out the episode. Hit that subscribe button before you get out of here. You made it to the end. You might as well. I'll send you three brand new interviews every single week, a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can grab them at Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. Subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Also, please do give the series a rating. Leave a review while you're at it. And after that, you can head over to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show Monday through Friday, starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. You get 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. You get the best in new music. There are bonus interviews, lots of music news as well. One of my recent shows featured some classics and favorites from 13th Floor Elevators, X, The Clash, Garbage, Bush, Poe, The Lemonheads, Stereophonics, Shaky Graves, Waxahachie, Sinead O'Connor, Nina Simone, Tom Waits, The Black Keys, Joya Ladikin, Supreme Beings of Leisure, Janelle Monae, Tierra Whack, and my interview with Shinedown, Brent Smith from Shinedown. An example of what you can hear every weeknight when you tune in at 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news, and you can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always the same. It's at Kyle Meredith, so I do hope you follow along. That does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Oh, pleasure's all mine.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.